Now, back to Brainstorming with Billy.
The Living Brain.
Now, here's your host, Billy the Brain.
Welcome back. This is Bill Frank, and you're listening to Brainstorming with Billy the Brain right here on KKZZ, Positive Talk Radio for Ventura County. Every show has a theme, and our theme today is those who got it right and those who didn't. Each of my three guests is talking about a person or a group that either succeeded or failed grandly. My first guest is the leading biographer of Presidents Ronald Reagan and Theodore Roosevelt. We talked about Teddy Roosevelt's career after he left the White House. My second guest is an expert on getting things right. He's a business execution expert, and we discussed his list of six companies that failed to execute in 2010 and two companies that did. My next guest believes our current political system is broken. Our politicians talk around the issues but never really seem to address them, partly because of partisan politics. He's here to offer some solutions to the impasse. And if you want to join in the conversation, you can always call us at 639-0008. Saul Erdman is president of the Center for Collaborative Democracy, a nonpartisan organization that has developed innovative ways for citizens and politicians to resolve ideological conflicts. The Center for Collaborative Democracy grew out of the MIT-Harvard Public Disputes Program. Saul started his career, of all places, on Wall Street. He rose to the level of senior vice president and head of options arbitrage at Oppenheimer Company. At midlife, however, Erdman was drawn to the idea of resolving difficult conflicts. So attending the program on negotiations at Harvard Law School, he has been doing a leading-edge research since that time and is one of the country's leading thinkers on the topic. Welcome to the show, Saul. How are you today?
Good to be here.
Well, it's a pleasure to have you here, all the way from New York City. So here are some of the issues that we're faced with, and this is just a partial list that I came up with. Our school children are among the most poorly educated in the developed world. We're addicted to foreign oil, which is we're spending money to enrich nations that are mounting deficits, could be a real death knell for the United States in years to come. These are all daunting problems. Yet you're on the record as saying our current politicians will do little about these and other large problems. Why do you say that? What's the underlying reason that our politicians are ineffectual?
Well, let me respond with a simple question. Let's say you ask 20 of your neighbors to meet and discuss just the issues and the problems you mentioned just now. 20 of your neighbors right nearby you.
All right.
How many different opinions would they have on what to do about those?
22. Things?
Okay. So imagine if these 22 people have all these different opinions on all the pressing issues of our day. How can one person represent a district of 700,000 people on these issues? How is it possible?
It's not. I mean, it's that's one of the
possible
things. We've batted this around on the show before. Representation has gotten way out of control. It was designed to be 60,000 people per representative in the United States Congress.
But even if it were 60,000, you just told me 20 people wouldn't agree barely on the time of day. The idea of representation by geography no longer makes sense. It doesn't work. It worked fine when we were all farmers. 200 years ago, when the country was created, 80% of us were farmers, and the rest of us sold goods and services to nearby farmers. If you had a representative for a district, if he acted in his constituents' interest, he could convince them he had. And if he didn't convince them, they voted him out of office.
Mm-hmm.
There is no such thing now as representing a district's interest. We don't have common interests. We have some in common, but we have much more differences than we have agreements on the pressing issues of the day. As long as we have representation by geographic district, our politicians will not dare solve our problems, because the way to get reelected, all they have to do is convince those 700,000 voters, or a majority of them, 50.1%, that the other guy or the other party is worse. That's all it takes.
That's
what they devote their energy to.
Now, you've intrigued me. So if we get away from representation by geography, what would we move towards?
Representation by values, interests, and beliefs. And it's actually quite easy to do. California is the easiest place in the world to do it. California has 53 representatives. Instead of having 53 districts of one representative each, what if you had 10 districts of five or six representatives each?
All right. Expand on that further. So
okay,
we've got these 10 districts.
Within a district, you could have five representatives across the political spectrum. And the way I like to think of it is, I say, let's say you looked at the top presidential candidates of 2008.
Okay.
In each district, instead of having one Republican and one Democrat, let's say you had 12 candidates covering the spectrum from Barack Obama, Hillary Clinton, John Edwards, Joe Biden, Dennis Kucinich, Ron Paul, John McCain, Mike Huckabee, Rudy Giuliani, and you go on. You just had all those candidates running, and the five top, those who best reflected the views of of the district are the ones who elected. Now, each voter would have a representative they could truly believe in, and every representative would have constituents who really believed in his or her political values, orientation, and belief.
All right. We're talking to Saul Erdman, everybody, author of the book, The Cure for Our Broken Political Process. So, Saul, I'm going to come back to this a little bit and expand on that just a little bit farther for us, because that sounds great when you're talking about one office, which is the presidency.
But I'm talking about the Congress. Talking about organizing the House of Representatives along these lines.
Gotcha.
Because we need representation, real representation, not representation by district, representation by values, interests, and beliefs, so that the average American knows that if they go to vote, they're going to get a representative they can believe in. And they have someone, not only someone they can believe in, but someone they can hold accountable for producing results on the agenda he or she ran for office.
All right. Now, accountability is one of your major theses. In fact, you've got something that you call PAR, which is an acronym that stands for Personally Accountable Representation. So talk to us about PAR and how would that help change the political landscape?
Well, let me describe how it would work by giving you a simple model. Let's say a small town wants to elect a town council that will truly represent the interests of its residents. So let's say the whole town meets in a large hall, and you get 20 candidates running for a five-member town council. And the 20 candidates hand out copies of their priorities for the town to everyone in the hall. And then people have a chance to digest it, and every candidate goes to a different point in the room. And the person running the meeting asks each person present to gather around their favorite candidate. And let's say that when that's done, the person running the meeting looks around and he sees the candidate with the fewest backers and asks him to drop out and asks him and his followers to pick another candidate who has more backers. And he keeps doing that until five representatives are left. You now have an election process by which each voter would get a representative pretty close to him or herself politically, and you would have each representative having constituents who had signed up for his or her platform. So now, when the town council meets, if the representative works out his differences as well as possible with the other five candidates, with those who have won, he can go back to his constituents and say, look, I'm one person out of five. You elected me to accomplish A, B, C, D, and E. Well, I couldn't get D and I couldn't get E for the following reasons, but I was able to get A, B, and most of C. This is what we worked out, and it's as good as we're going to get.
Well, it all sounds very logical, and when you bring it down to the town level, that makes sense. But fundamental to that argument is the fact that you get the entire town to show up to cast mm-hmm. their vote. One of the big problems that I see, Saul, is that we've got disenfranchised voters. What was the voter turnout on a national scale? Here in Ventura County, it was only 39% at the midterm elections, which is abysmal. So how do you change the mindset of the voters today who are currently don't believe that their vote counts, and then how do you get them involved in the new process?
Well, because, in fact, the average voter who thinks his vote doesn't count, he's right. If 700,000 people in a district have to select one representative, and they all have different opinions, the odds that any voter is going to get a representative who he can really believe in is pretty close to zero. The idea that, you know, vote doesn't count is really true. If you require 700,000 people to share one representative, your vote does not count. But if you convince people that if you go to the polls, you're going to get someone who truly reflects your values, your opinions, your beliefs, your concerns, I guarantee you voter turnout is going to double.
Well, doubling from 39, that brings us up to 78%.
That wouldn't be so bad, wouldn't it?
It would be wonderful if we could get there. We're a far cry from it today. Well, let me play the devil's advocate, if I can, for just
Please.
A minute, Sal. Because the midterm elections, if you look at this dispassionately, the midterm elections are actually telling us something, that the average American doesn't want to see change. They want gridlock in Washington. That's why we voted the bums out, and now we've got a new set of bums.
Well, I think you're ascribing to the collective consciousness to individual voters. In other words, it looks like we voted for gridlock because we elected a Republican House and a much more Republican Senate in opposition to a Democratic president. So it looks like the country voted for gridlock. And I would suggest to you that on the individual level, I don't think that's what happened. On the individual level, people are angry, people are frustrated, people are scared. And what was going on in Washington wasn't working. So you're right. We throw out one set of bums and we try a new set of bums because there is no alternative now. You don't have an alternative now. You cannot go to the polls and get someone you truly believe in. So what else can you do but lash out?
All right.
So I think, in other words, when I say the political process is broken, it's broken at both ends. It's broken in the sense that a voter is fairly powerless today, and a representative who, if he wants to stay in office, has pretty much got to duck the major issues and just throw rocks at the other side.
All right. We're talking to Sol Erdman, everybody, author of the book, The Cure for Our Broken Political Process, How We Can Get Our Politicians to Resolve the Issues Tearing Our Country Apart. And, Sol, as I listen to what you're saying, I'm trying to equate it to another country in the world who's similar or close to what you're prescribing here. And the one that comes to mind to me is Great Britain, where you've got multiple parties and you work in what they would call the Senate to get sort of a coalition government going. What country would you say is closest to your prescribed theory of democracy, and how well is it working there?
Well, actually, none are some are halfway. In other words, there are countries, a lot of them in Europe, where you vote for a party, and each party gets seats in proportion to the number of votes it gathers. But there's a major difference. In other countries, you vote for parties. I'm suggesting you need individuals. Like you said, what I'm proposing is called personally accountable representation. That's what we need. And that would be unique in the sense there is no country in the world where you have individual representatives who have constituents, specific constituents, all of whom are aligned around his or her political values and beliefs. We either have organization by parties or you have organization by district. And I'm suggesting either one is the right way to organize politics if you want real resolution of conflict. You want real collaborative problem solving. You need individually accountable representatives.
All right. Now, I'm going to do something here. I'm going to assign you to be king of the world for a day, and then we're going to go back to a representative democracy. But during that day, you can actually execute the PAR system that you are talking about here. What steps are you going to have to take to make this become a reality in the United States?
Well, it has to start at the local level. It has to, in other words, no one is going to back this idea for Congress until they see it really working, until they know it works. It's a proven model. So, in fact, in this next month, an article of mine is going to appear in the National Civic Review, which lays out the case for organizing representation in cities that are in trouble along the above lines, representations by values and beliefs and interests, not by geography. And I lay out the case that this would be a problem-solving city council organized along these lines. And this is a practical thing to pursue on a city level for multiple reasons. Number one, lots of cities have referendums where city voters can vote out the existing election process and create a new election process. In fact, there are several California cities that have done this process, have changed their elections recently. San Francisco, Oakland, there are a few others which I don't remember. But so this is feasible at the city level. So that's where it has to start. So that would be the first step.
All right.
Make this happen at the city level in cities that are in trouble, where people recognize that they're in trouble and they need a new process, a new collaborative problem-solving process. Once people see it working at the city level, there are plenty of states with referendums. So again, states could adopt, and California is one of them that uses referendums, some of which has created a lot of mischief, but here's an opportunity for a referendum that would create a really functioning state legislature. Personally accountable state legislature in California is something you need as much as my state does.
More so.
Well, New York and California in competition to see which has a more dysfunctional legislature.
We'll race you to the bottom, Sol. All right.
So those would be the first steps.
Okay. So
it's practical.
We implemented. All right. So you're coming out with this article that's going to be published here shortly. What sort of cities are considering doing this? Or flip that around, what cities would you recommend taking on the PAR system?
Well, there are, I understand, 30 to 50 cities across the country that are expected to be on the brink of bankruptcy. And I haven't seen all their names, but there are several in California, I know, that are bankrupt or nearing bankruptcy. There's certainly plenty in the Rust Belt. So cities that have not up to now done a constructive job of dealing with their problems, this is a better way of doing it. It's a clearly better way of doing it. It is specifically a problem-solving method of representation.
All right, Sol. We're talking to Sol Erdman, everybody. Tell me, what's going to get us over the emotional hump to do it? All right, let's say we identify a city in the Rust Belt, and I'm just going to pick a name, Toledo. I don't know if they're on the list or not, but let's say Toledo. That's a fairly large-sized city. To get them to change the way they've been doing business for the last 210-plus years, that's going to take some mighty powerful persuasion. What's going to persuade the average citizen to want to try to change?
Well, there has to be a core of civic leaders who are distressed by the direction their city has taken, and who say we need better government if we're all to prosper. So, I mean, I can preach this idea. It has to be taken up by people in their community. Each community has to have civic leaders who decide this is the direction we have to go in. And as I said, there are 25 cities. I'm sorry, there are 25 to 30 cities that have adopted major election changes in the last decade. So this is something feasible, but it has to be people who are willing to put in the hard work, a core of people who are willing to do in the hard work. That can generate enthusiasm. The majority just have to say, okay, this is something better, let's try it. They don't even have to be convinced that this is a better mousetrap. They have to say, things are bad enough, this is worth a try.
That they're willing to try to do it. We're talking to Saul Erdman, everybody. The cure for our broken political process. Very heady stuff, very thoughtful stuff, Sal. If people want to learn more about you, want to learn more about your coalition, where would you direct them to go?
My website, genuinerepresentation.org.
Genuinerepresentation.org. And there they can find out about you. Can they learn more about the book there as well?
Yes. You get a link to the book directly on the site.
All right. That is great. Last question before I let you go, and that is, what do you get out of taking this activist role in your coalition trying to get the government to change?
You personally? A sense of purpose. The feeling that I think I have something to contribute at a time when the country is in great distress and many Americans are in great distress. And look, it's a very powerful thing to have a sense of purpose like this.
That it is. And we're going to have to leave it there, Saul. Thank you so much for all that you do. It's been a pleasure talking to you. We'll talk to you down the road.
Been good to be here.
Thanks very much.